It's Friday, December 4th, 2015. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good evening and welcome to a new podcast episode. It has been a while since I have recorded a solo podcast. The last couple, I think, have been some discussions that I've had with my wife, Shelley. The last one we did was following the Miami Device Conference. And it may sound odd, and I'm sure I sound like a complete dork to do this on a Friday night. But yes, I am at home, and our girls are with my wife down at the theater where she's working, and my son is working on homework, and I am going to record a podcast. And I'll go ahead and give you a preview of topics. This is probably going to run about an hour. A few weeks or maybe even a month ago, I wrote a blog post called Too Guilty to Blog or something like that. And basically, I was just explaining how I had so many different things to do, and I just didn't feel like, you know, I could take the time to set aside to blog. And I've had multiple topics that I've wanted to write blog posts about, and I know I've needed to do a podcast. So anyway, tonight, as I was getting supper ready, I just kind of sketched out some ideas for things that I have been wanting to write about, and I'm going to talk about these things tonight. So, in order, here's what you're going to get in this podcast. First, I'm going to just talk a little briefly about my situation now as a technology director, which I started at the beginning of July this year. I'm going to talk about iPad Media Camp to Go and some plans that I have to allow folks to basically, license and pay for a video-based iPad Media Camp that you can host yourself. I'm still going to have a couple iPad Media Camps face-to-face, of course, but we'll talk about that. Secondly, my favorite podcasts and audiobooks that I've been listening to and listened to recently. Third, we're going to talk about things I've learned or lessons learned about fiber optic cabling. Four, we're going to talk about lessons learned video conferencing and the 7 significant video conferences I've participated in this fall. Fifth, we'll talk about classroom projection options and AirPlay mirroring, a couple Google Docs that I actually put together this week. Sixth, we'll talk about briefly a voice over IP phone transition that we are in the midst or on the brink of hopefully doing at our school. Seven, I'll talk a little bit about firewall shopping, which I've been doing with our network administrator at school. Eighth, I'm going to talk about Rachel being a YouTuber and the parent of a budding YouTube star. Ninth, I'll mention the mailing list, ISTE, and a little bit about ways that you can stay up to date on news, because I'm going to start actually using my mailing list. And then last of all, 10th, I will answer a question that just came in from Twitter about how to make your docs searchable in Google. I probably should do that one first. But I will try to go ahead and put these different topics as specific links, because I think the way that the Podlove plugin for WordPress, which I'm using and have been using for a number of years on my WordPress site, works, is that you can go ahead and directly, you know, put the time that these different topics are discussed. So sort of like chapter marks. So anyway, without further ado, here we go with our podcast for December 4th, 2015. All right. Well, first, I'll just talk briefly about my current situation for those that may be new to the podcast or may not have heard a little bit about my teaching situation as it's changed. The last 4 years, I've worked in Yukon Public Schools for the first half as an instructional coach on a grant, and then for the last half as a grade 4-5 STEM teacher. And so after finishing my doctorate in 2011, I had been applying to different programs, thinking that higher ed would be where I would end up landing. But as it has worked out, it is fantastic to be a school technology director. And I am the director of technology at Cassidy School, which is an independent private school about 8 minutes from our house in Northwest Oklahoma City. We have about 900 students in pre-K through 12th grade. And we have somewhere around 160 faculty and staff. And it is just an absolutely wonderful, amazing place to work and a great job that I absolutely love. And I have ended up continuing to work with STEM. This last semester, I co-led a after-school STEM club with one of our science teachers, a fourth grade science teacher, Mr. Lopez. And in fact, we're talking about, and I've got to send this proposal out to do next week, a little Minecraft redstone challenge for some of our students, because we did some Minecraft and STEM club. The last 2 years in UConn, I had by myself had an after-school STEM club. But anyway, I guess I'll share two quick analogies or ways of kind of explaining my job and what it's felt like. On the one hand, I did actually rent this movie on Apple TV and watch it, Elysium, which is a Matt Damon movie. And I kind of felt, moving from a public school to a private school, a little bit like Elysium. And if you're familiar with the plot of that movie, the wealthy folks live out in the orbit of Earth on this space station, and then there's just, you know, really hard work and war and all kinds of things happening back on the planet. And a friend of mine, Andre, who works for Oklahoma City Public Schools in the ed tech department, had taken me it's about a year ago, to several of the schools that are just not far away from our house at all. Our youngest daughter attended Quail Creek Elementary, which is a really good Oklahoma City, elementary school, and has a good reputation, and I could do a whole show talking about Oklahoma City schools and our experiences there. I probably should. But anyway, there are schools that are just, you know, blocks away, that never last year had all of their, certified positions filled. They were needing teachers all year long. And so anyway, there's just great contrast that we have. And this is probably true in any urban city in the United States, that we've got, you know, different neighborhoods and different schools and things that are side by side. But anyway, that was one analogy. And now I'm trying to think of the other one and it's not coming to me right now. It's blue collar, white collar. When you move from classroom teacher to an administrative role, and I have done this before in my now 21 year educational career, it's a lot like moving from a blue collar job to a white collar job. And there's a lot of cognitive dissonance. People, you know, have asked me what the best part of my job is, and I've seriously said it's having a bathroom right next to my office that I can use at any time, because last year our schedule was such that we taught 5 back-to-back classes and I couldn't go to the bathroom every day until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because there was no break in between the classes. It was pretty much a horrific schedule, which thankfully they did abandon, after several of us left, and you know, it was just not good. But the door has opened for me to be in this new position. I absolutely love it and am just so thankful and feel so blessed to have the opportunity that I do to work with teachers and students, to be able to, you know, work on a coaching basis with teachers. I work with our, high school, video production teacher this last week, and was able to hand her an iPad, the first one she's ever had, and working with her on, you know, thinking about ideas for lessons and activities and projects. I mean, that's just so fun. And then there's all this technical stuff that is going on, which I'll talk a little bit here, with firewall shopping and voice over IP stuff with phones and Bonjour, what's it called? That's not a Bonjour gateway. Bonjour forwarding, you know, working with AirPlay and stuff on our network. So anyway, a little bit about my situation, probably more than you needed to know, who knows. But there it is anyway. Next topic, and I think I'm going to do audio bumpers in between, so let's move to topic number two. All right, so I said topic number two. It's actually topic number one. I didn't even give my intro a number, so that was topic zero. Topic one is to talk a little bit about iPad Media Camp. So the last four summers, I have had a very fun opportunity to lead three-day workshops that I have called iPad Media Camps. And this has been, without a doubt, my favorite model of professional development of all the different kinds of workshops and trainings and things that I've participated in, I've led, and courses I've taught. I just love this three-day model. And so you can find the details for this on iPadMediaCamp.com, and you can follow on Twitter, iPadMediaCamp. And maybe it was two summers ago, I worked a little bit with Brad Wilson, who is up in Michigan and does awesome, awesome work with teachers, especially around podcasting and student voice. And it was kind of the first little try or attempt I'd made at kind of franchising this. And cause he'd asked, hey, could we do the iPad Media Camp for our teachers? I've been approached by Adam Jones, from up in the Northeast about this, and because the last few summers, I mean, I've, as a regular classroom teacher, I've had the summer off, so I've been able to do, you know, a lot of iPad Media Camps. So I think I did four last summer. I did one in Olathe, Kansas, one here in Oklahoma City, one in, gosh, where were the others? Didn't do one in Manhattan. I didn't write all this down, so, and hey, maybe I'm getting old because I'm not remembering all this stuff. It's all on the website, but, I ended up canceling the one that was for Manhattan, so maybe I ended up just doing three. But anyway, I think I am probably going to be able to do two next summer face to face. One will be here in Oklahoma City at our school, at Cassidy School, and I've got to get that date set. There's a possibility I might be able to do one, and I haven't finalized any of these details yet, up in Wyoming, in either Cody, Wyoming, or in Jackson Hole. I've got some friends and contacts up there that I've visited with. But anyway, the brainstorm is that I'm gonna record videos and basically do this Dave Ramsey style. If you're familiar with Dave Ramsey and Financial Peace University and some of his great training that he has for financial management, he creates DVDs along with workbooks that he provides, and then folks can facilitate his class, but you don't have to be the quote-unquote lecturer or deliverer of the content because that is in the DVD you facilitate. And so I'm going to do that same model with iPad Media Camp, and I will create, before I publish this podcast, so the link will be there, an interest form that you can put your name and email, no commitment, but if you're interested in possibly bringing iPad Media Camp, a three-day experience to your teachers, wherever you happen to live, this will be a way to do it. And I'm not going to be locked in stone for this, but I think the pricing is probably going to be $500, and that's going to give you access not only to the curriculum, but to all of the videos. And there's a lot of videos and content that I've published in the curriculum is out on a Google site that I've created, which I'll continue to update and have available. But the videos are going to be the introductions to each one of the modules, and it will really allow you to have me lead the iPad Media Camp there at your school or, you know, for your conference or organization, district, whatever you'd like to do. So check it out, iPadMediaCamp.com, iPad Media Camp on Twitter. Now let's move on to topic number two. All right, topic number two. It looks like this is going to be an epic podcast. Maybe I'm going to have to doggone cut this in half. Or maybe I should speed up, but I'm going to try not to talk too fast. I wrote down favorite podcasts and audiobooks. So three of my favorite podcasts that I'm listening to a lot now are the Clockwise podcast. That's a great tech podcast that lasts 30 minutes. They have four guests and four topics. Just an awesome model, and I just love it. Really been listening to that one a lot. Next one is The Committed Show. In the last couple weeks, I haven't been listening as much, but I was probably listening to at least they have a weekly show, so I was listening to their show each week for most of this semester. And it's also a technology podcast. These aren't education specific. It's kind of hard to find regular educational technology podcasts. And yeah, I'm guilty as charged that I'm not producing this show on a consistent regular basis. But like I said, there's a lot of reasons for that. But one educational podcast that I definitely want to give a shout out to and point you to is the Adam Jones podcast. Had a chance to chat with Adam here a couple weeks ago at the Miami Device Conference. And, he is just doing some great, you know, exploring with podcasting. He's podcasted from iPad Palooza last summer and did a lot of podcasting from Miami Device and, you know, just doing some really good reflection. And I love it. I wish there were more educators, you know, creating podcasts, sharing podcasts, and, you know, using the medium, because it's such a powerful way and valuable way to connect. And it's really a more intimate way, in many respects than even blogging and writing or certainly social media like Twitter. So those are three podcasts, and I will, by the way, include links to all of these in the podcast show notes. The two audiobooks that I have just loved this last couple months, the first one is called Magic, and doggone it, I don't have the author's name memorized, so I'm going to have to look it up really quick in my tweet nest. Big Magic, that's what it is. I have an installation of a free program called TweetNest, and that's what I really use to go back and look. So yes, Liz Gilbert is the author. She's the author of, Think, Pray, something. I haven't read her other book, but Big Magic, it is great. It is about creating, and it is just all kinds of stories about the magic and the inexplicable things that can happen with ideas and creativity. And whether you are a writer or you're a graphic artist or you want to create with clay or Legos or video or whatever it is just fantastic. So check it out by Liz Gilbert, Big Magic. And then the book that I am almost finished listening to, and I'm listening and have listened to both of these on audible.com, is the recently published biography of Elon Musk. And Elon Musk has, you know, three companies really, not just two. Steve Jobs had Pixar and Apple, but Elon has SpaceX, which is, now successful space company. In fact, I think next week they've been trying to land the first stage of the rockets in the ocean on a really large platform, and they've come close but haven't done it successfully. But next week, if I was reading news right last night, they're going to be landing or trying to land on the Earth. Well, on it's all on the Earth, I guess, but on land versus ocean. And they're going to be doing that at Cape Canaveral. So it is, gosh, I can do a whole post and podcast about how amazing Elon Musk is. His third company is Solar City. It is just, it's very inspirational. I mean, I only have maybe 3 hours left in the audiobook. And he is just a remarkable person. It's very sad to learn about what happened to his family and his marriage and things like that. He is a driven person, and the things that he has already accomplished and the things that he's on track to accomplish, especially with all three companies, with Tesla, with SpaceX, and Solar City, it's just phenomenal. So I really can't recommend those books and audiobooks highly enough to you. For the last 5 or so years, I have, or maybe more, I've had a subscription to audible.com, and I originally got on that deal by listening to the Twit This Week in Tech podcast and use their discount code. It gives you a credit per month, and it costs something like $15, I think. But basically you get another, you know, audiobook a month. And I definitely consume more long form literature books, you know, listening to them in my car. Now my commute has gone from almost 30 minutes to about 8 minutes. I still, you know, end up actually, we have an 80 acre campus with about 20 buildings. And so I end up driving in my car sometimes, well, not sometimes, sometimes multiple times a day, to different parts of our campus, and I'll, you know, flip the podcast on sometimes. I did that today. But anyway, it is, you know, podcasts are great. Audiobooks are great. It is a fantastic way to, you know, kind of multitask and recapture some time and, you know, be able to learn on the go. So that was topic number two. Let's head off to topic number three, fiber optic cable. Okay, so here are a few things that I have learned in the last 2 weeks, really, about fiber optic cabling, and especially as that applies to schools. And the first thing is that squirrels bite, and they chew, and they can chew through fiber optic cable. We have one of our buildings that has had a lot of squirrel problems, squirrels getting into the attic, and our maintenance staff has really, you know, worked hard to try to cover vents and put metal screens and all kinds of things up. But we had one of our fiber optic lines to what was the old headmaster's house, and it now houses several different parts of our administrative staff, our development office. I think it's academic advancement is what this is all under, development, admissions, alumni relations. And so anyway, they lost their internet about 2 weeks ago, and in the process of troubleshooting this and trying to figure out, you know, what was this, my network administrator, Lauren, who is very knowledgeable about fiber optics, has a attachment that goes on an LED flashlight, and it focuses the light and allows you to hook it up to a fiber optic cable. There's two cables that make up a fiber optics pair, and he could be back at our admin building, which is probably walking distance, you know, two blocks maybe from our main server room, but I guess I was all the way over in Woolsey House, which is the actual former headmaster's home that's you know, used administratively. And he's shown that flashlight, and I could see the light, you know, coming through the strand, you know, all the way, whatever, two or three blocks away as it ran underground and, you know, through this circuitous route, which actually ended up going through a bunch of buildings, because it turns out that we have kind of a fiber ring, which provides some redundancy, not for this particular building. It's really the end of the line and doesn't have redundancy on a ring. But that was kind of cool to be able to know that you could, you know, use a flashlight and a special attachment. We found that you know, one strand was dark and then the other one was still lit. And so we called out our vendor that has installed most of our fiber, and definitely in the past years, you know, knows how things are set up. And so they were able to use a laser in order to determine distance and figure out where the break was in the fiber. And thankfully it wasn't underground. It was in the attic of one of our buildings called the Hightower building. And this is where they've been having these squirrel problems. So they had actually thought it was a mouse that had chewed through the fiber, but it turns out we're almost positive that it was squirrels, because the squirrels have been having, you know, causing so much trouble there. So one of the things that I learned is our need for a map that, you know, exactly shows how our fiber optic cables go, opening up the closets where our networking cables are, and then really, you know, seeking to understand how all the fiber, which I don't yet, but how everything is connected and it works. You know, we've got some dark fiber, some cabling that's not being utilized, you know, different pairs and different strands in different places. I guess we have parts of a map that were drawn at one point, but that's something that I'm still looking for and trying to find from what our former tech director had left, and we'll hopefully obtain. It's kind of a complex web and nest, and it was really a troubleshooting feat for them to figure out exactly where the break was. What we found out and decided to do was to put in something called armored fiber, which is a metal sheath that goes around the fiber strands, and that now runs the length of the attic in our Hightower building where all the squirrels have been. And so they are very unlikely to be able to chew through this metal, and so hopefully that is not going to be a point of failure for our fiber optic network down the road. It is amazing to look at this fiber optic cable, which is like a strand of hair, and then try to imagine the quantity of data that travels on it. You know, it is just staggering. We, and I'm not going to be able to say the number of nanometers or whatever. There's two different sizes and sort of ages of fiber, basically old and new. And from what I understood from our vendors, the old fiber can basically handle 1 gigabit per second traffic, whereas the new fiber can handle 10 gigabits per second. Something else that I learned, we have, and I'll talk a little more about this, but a Cisco Meraki network. Meraki was a type of access point networking technology that was created or invented by students at MIT a number of years ago and got bought up by Cisco. And it's mesh-based and very intelligent, all cloud-managed, and anyway, it's really great. But I learned what a gigabit is. When you want to hook a fiber optic cable up to a switch, which are the devices that you hook up all your Ethernet cables, your internet cables to in the closet, as you have, you know, Ethernet either directly running to computers, as, you know, generally you will in a computer lab. We actually have Ethernet cables in all of our classrooms that our teachers can plug in directly to. But then they also, you know, go to wireless access points that you've got scattered, you know, around your buildings. You have this thing called a gigabit, which looks, it has a little circuit board on it, and then the fiber cables, the fiber jumpers, go into that. And so one more thing that I learned about fiber was that if you get moisture inside the sheath, I guess, that covers the fiber, something can happen called dry pick. And this is when the, you know, plastic or fiberglass or whatever the sheathing is made of, probably plastic, it expands and it the one that we have turned all blue in this one particular closet. And so anyway, keep your fiber dry. The vendor had said they'd saw that in one other high school that had fiber cabling in a locker room with showers and things like that. And so the particular closet where that happened has got a sink and some chemicals and things like that. So anyway, cool learning about fiber optic cable. And it was a good relief to finally get that fixed, or for our vendor to be able to get that fixed and get everybody back online. We had to farm everyone out from that office, you know, around campus and different places. And so anyway, I was able to successfully shepherd a fiber optic repair, you know, working with our vendor. And because part of that time, our network admin, who is the guru of fiber, was actually on vacation. So that was a good growing experience for me as a technology director. All right. Topic 3, over. Here we go on topic number 4. And this one is a topic, it's learning about video conferencing. I probably still will write a post about this, but this fall I've had the opportunity to facilitate and or participate in 7 different significant video conferences. And this isn't just like FaceTime to mom kind of thing. These were events that were involving, lots of folks. And so all 4 of them were to India, and they were actually closing keynote presentations that I gave. And then 2 of them were at school, and then 1 was at our church. So I'll talk about the ones to India first. There's a organization called Exceed Education, and that's spelled X. And then SEED, S-E-E-D, Education. And they host conferences around India, really focused on helping teachers make a shift to 21st century teaching and blend learning and look at pedagogies that can involve, you know, in the case what I was advocating for, creating media projects and products, using media to show what you know. And so I video conferenced for 3 of these. I had to get up at like 4:30 in the morning, and the video conferences started. They were like 4:30. I would start talking at like 5:30 our time, and that was 4 p.m. India time. So it was almost a 12-hour difference. And it's kind of wild because I'd get up really early and then, you know, do this connect, and we'd have test calls and everything in advance, and then do this keynote and then go to work, after having just, you know, given a keynote and in some cases to, you know, I think 200, 300 people on the other side of the planet. And so, I have a Tandberg H.323 IP video conference unit here at my house. And, that was the main unit, I guess, three of the times that I connected to them with. But I was also connecting to them with a piece of software called TeamViewer. And TeamViewer allows you, or allows me in this case, to control my presentation. So I had emailed them my PowerPoint and three video clips that I wanted to show, but rather than showing them over the video, which tends to have high latency and maybe, you know, drop packets and skip, it was playing locally, and I was controlling the PowerPoint from the other side of the planet using TeamViewer, which is just so cool. So I gave keynotes, and I'll include in the show notes, I think I only did one of these, but on my supplementary podcast channel, Fuel for Educational Change Agents, which you can find at audio.speedofcreativity.org, I actually did share an audio recording of one of these. So I presented to educators that were in Bangalore, India, Madurai, spelled M-A-D-U-R-A-I, Kochi, which I think is in southern India, and then also New Delhi. So, man, in one of the cases, I think it was when I was presenting to Madurai, I mean, there were some educators that had traveled like 2 and 3 hours to get there. And so crazy to, you know, have been able to share a message and connect in that way to, you know, educators from rural India. It's just, it was one of these, you know, world is flat moments. If you've read Tom Friedman's or listened to Tom Friedman's World is Flat book, just staggering. And so I've, you know, done a whole bunch of video conferencing, I guess going back to about 2001 when I started to work as the director of distance learning in the College of Education at Texas Tech. But sometimes technology, even if it's become normal and you've done it a while, it still just can really amaze you. The last video conference I did, I was actually doing it at the end of October, and it fell on a trip that my son and I took. Alexander is a senior, and we were able to travel earlier in October to Colorado, or maybe that was actually September, to the School of Mines, where he's interested in applying and is applying to go be an engineer. And then we were taking a last college trip at the end of October to visit Rensselaer, which is in Albany, New York. We took Southwest Airlines to Albany. And then we drove about 2.5 or 3 hours almost to Boston, to Needham, Massachusetts, where an incredible, incredible school called Olin School, which absolutely captivated me, and I could do a whole podcast about that, and I probably should, is located. And so anyway, the morning of our tour at Olin was when I needed to give this this last keynote. And if you've stayed in a hotel, you know, in the last few years and tried to do anything fast on their Wi-Fi, I mean, unless it's an exceptional hotel, you probably had a bad experience. The shared, you know, bandwidth, I don't think many hotels have smart networks that, you know, prevent somebody who's streaming Netflix or YouTube from just hogging all the bandwidth. So I actually ended up using my laptop as well as my iPad. My son is on T-Mobile at the time. Now I've switched over for work on AT&T. And so Alexander on his T-Mobile was getting something crazy, like 20 megabits per second upstream bandwidth. With AT&T, I was getting something like 5, or maybe it was 10. I took some screenshots to record the speeds. But anyway, so here I was connected to India, tethered to both of our phones on TeamViewer. I was connected to a video conferencing platform called Zoom, and I think the quality of the Zoom video conference on my iPad was actually better than it was, you know, on this, what was like a $17,000 setup when I initially, you know, got it from Tanberg. And now my iPad's even better. But anyway, and then on my laptop, I was, you know, connected via another cell phone data connection, and I was using TeamViewer to control my presentation. So if you had seen this in action, you would have laughed, because I had actually stacked cushions and, you know, kind of had to figure out how to get my iPad at the right height and angled and everything. But of course, nobody doing the video conference, or, you know, that I was connecting to, could kind of see that part. I was, you know, they were seeing the wall where I was kind of, I'd set the lights up and everything. So anyway, lots of learning there. The other video conferences I did two for school. The first one was with an amazing guy named Jeremy Gilley, who's been a real champion for International Peace Day and the Day of Peace. I'll include a link to him and to Peace Day. This was for our service learning organization that is at our school. Hope you don't hear my dog grunting. This is Willow, and she doesn't bark, but she's laying on the bed here with me, and as I rub her, she's making noises. So you hear a strange animal noise. That's what it is. And then the second one was for the, at school was for the same group, but it was with an organization called Global Nomads. And back in the early 2000s, when I was, you know, first getting into distance learning, and I was traveling to the Texas Distance Learning Association conference, which is pretty amazing, TXDLA. Global Nomads was a group that I'd heard a lot about, and they are so professional. We literally video conferenced to a bunch of students and teachers and community members in the Andes of Peru. And I wrote down the name Anda Huayales. I'm not pronouncing it right. It was incredible. I can include links to a Google photo album that I took of photographs that were of our students that were participating, as well as students at another school, and then the kids in Peru. And so our school was selected because the students had raised so much money for literacy and for books that was a service learning project that they did. So wow, lots of things that I learned via these, you know, video conferences. Number one, I didn't realize that a USB Ethernet adapter is now available for Mac computers. MacBook Airs and other laptops now, you know, don't have built-in Ethernet ports like the old MacBooks used to. And I had a Lightning connector, but you can now have one that is a USB connector. And that's really nice, because if you have an older MacBook Air laptop, as I was using at the time, it only has one Lightning port. And so I couldn't use the Lightning port for Ethernet. I had to use it for the projector in our room. But since there's a USB adapter, then I could do wired Ethernet. Always, always use wired Ethernet if you can when you are video conferencing. That was a real lesson learned from the seventh video conference of the fall, which was one that I facilitated for our church. We had a big Saturday of meetings with another church in Colorado Springs. Our denomination is very scattered across the United States, and so we aren't able to have face-to-face presbytery meetings. And so this was a church-to-church meeting over video. And the first night of it on Friday, we were just going wireless and had some packet loss and some trouble with audio. And so I ended up going to Walmart, buying a 100-foot Ethernet cable, and then the next day, using that USB Ethernet adapter, and then directly, you know, jacking into the Ethernet at church. And man, it made a huge difference. It was so much better. Quality was so much better. Something else that was real handy was a Boundary microphone that I have that was actually part of my Tanberg gear. But I was able to hook it up because I have what's called a M-Audio USB Mobile Pre. And that allows you to connect USB microphones and, well, actually, In this case, it was an XLR microphone, and connect them via USB to a laptop. So you can use this for guitars or for other kinds of XLR mics. But that is a great thing. And it really was wonderful to have that microphone on a long, you know, cable or long cord, and, you know, be able, it's created for group based video conferencing. And so that worked great as we were connected via, you know, GoToMeeting, I think was the one we did for the church. All right. There you go. Topic number four done. So one of the things I've been working on for several months as a technology director is how we can get our network basically set up to be smart and not have the AirPlay devices, the iPads, the iPhones, and then even laptops that we want to wirelessly mirror to our projectors and televisions, how to not allow that traffic to cause all kinds of congestion and slow everything down. There is a metro area school district, which I will not name in this podcast. It's not Oklahoma City, but it's another one that's one of our districts. A few years ago, I heard the story that they had purchased Apple TVs for all their high school teachers, and they put them all on the network, turned them all on, and then it basically brought their network to a grinding halt because all of the Bonjour traffic, which is the chatty network traffic, as Apple TV, you know, reaches out and says, "Hey, I'm here. Do you want to connect to me?" And then allows you to do that connection. And it's great. I mean, I love AirPlay, love Bonjour. You know, in a home environment, not that big of a deal. In a school environment, if you just have a ton of folks, again, plugging in an Apple TV, that can really cause some problems. So this past August, I had an opportunity to share a two-day iPad Media Camp. It was abbreviated, out in Las Vegas, New Mexico, or no, Las Vegas, New Mexico, Las Vegas, Nevada, the Las Vegas. As a former West Texan, I was more used to saying Las Vegas, New Mexico. But this was in Las Vegas, New Mexico, Las Vegas, Nevada. And their school, and I think I wrote a blog post about this, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes. Their school has been one-to-one for a long time, and they initially had piloted this thing called a Bonjour Gateway, which is this device that allows you to create the segmentation in your network so that the AirPlay devices and the traffic that's going with Bonjour ends up being kind of contained in its own tunnel and it doesn't affect the rest of the network. Well, after doing some research, it turns out that kind of functionality is built into our Meraki devices, our Meraki access points and our switches, but it's something that has to be specially configured. And so we are very close, and I was working with our network administrator this last week to try to create a separate VLAN or a virtual local area network on our network that was going to just be for Apple TV. But the challenge of this is, and I don't at this point, at this moment, completely understand all this, VLANs can be created at the firewall level, which is really the first appliance that internet traffic encounters when it enters our school network the way that we're configured, or it can be on the core switch, which is the main switch that the firewall plugs into as it plugs into our network. And so what we were doing yesterday actually was, or maybe it was on Wednesday, creating that VLAN on the switch network, but there's other stuff that we got to do on our firewall. And so anyway, in a really large district where they have a lot more staffing, a lot more people, there's, you know, other folks to turn to who are specialists on these things. But as a smaller independent school, you know, we definitely rely a lot on vendors and vendor expertise. But this is something that, you know, and it's great that Meraki enables us to do a lot of this kind of management. So anyway, I will refer you to two Google documents that are both drafts. And I actually published these this evening right after I left school. One is called Classroom Projection Options, and the other is called AirPlay Mirroring. And the AirPlay Mirroring document kind of goes into some of the details of this and how, you know, we've got a separate hidden SSID or Wi-Fi network set up for AirPlay. And then the Classroom Projector Options kind of goes through how we're going to start offering, or I want to start offering, the option for teachers who don't want to use a smart board and don't use their smart board, because we have smart boards in all of our classrooms. If their projector goes out, and eventually when we start to refresh projectors, which we're close to needing to do in multiple cases, the option to have a large format LCD television. I was able to purchase this last week, as a Black Friday special, a 55-inch LCD Insignia brand television, which is Best Buy's home brand or their own brand, for $400, which was just amazing. And the regular sales price for that TV is like $500. $500 is about what I've seen, you know, different 55-inch televisions go for. So anyway, pairing that with an Apple TV can really be a great option for teachers that, again, don't want to use a smart board, because mirroring is so much easier. A television, you know, just has fewer moving parts and fewer things to go wrong, and it can be less expensive, too, than a projector. Smaller screen size, but, you know, other kinds of advantages. So ends topic five. All right, topic number 6, voice over IP phone transition. Well, I won't talk at super length about this, but the phone system that we have at our school is almost 2 decades old. It's close to 20 years old. It's still a copper wire based system. It does not run over Ethernet or voice over IP. And so the last month or so, we have been meeting with different vendor representatives and, you know, talking with also folks from Cox and AT&T. And this kind of goes back to things I learned quite a bit about when I worked for AT&T in 2006 to 2008, with E-rate and, you know, updates and whether schools were contracted for PRI lines, which have 12 channels of potential calls, and whether they're going to go SIP, which is a internet-based protocol. Oh, there's a whole lot here to figure out. And thankfully I've got some friends who are area technology directors and then, you know, some other people to reach out to. And so actually I'll do this as a shout out. If you have, shepherded or been involved with a transition to a voice over IP system, we've looked at systems from ShoreTel, from Cisco. Our current phone system is Mitel, and so that's one of the quotes that we've obtained is for a Mitel phone transition. Anyway, I'd just be interested to know, you know, what you found, and if you have any, you know, burning recommendations, say yes, definitely, you know, go with this. And there's a whole lot that's going to factor into this, you know, in terms of cost and function and how we can, you know, transition over. The bottom line is we have a voicemail system that essentially runs on a Windows 95 box, and the company that created it and that made the cards and they're specialized in all this are out of business. And, you know, if we were to try to fix something like that, we'd probably have to get on eBay or something. It wouldn't be something we could go, you know, buy off the shelf from a vendor new. So anyway, that is something that we'll be transitioning to, I anticipate, in the coming months, and I don't know exactly when, but that's going to be big, and it's also exciting because I think it's going to be sort of like going from a 1980s phone system to, you know, 2015. Maybe not 1980s, maybe it's 1990, but it's still going to be a huge leap forward as far as the function that we're going to be able to have to, you know, have a computer-based directory of all of our numbers and lines and be able to, you know, manage and move things, you know, much more easily since we'll just plug it into our existing Ethernet jacks, and then being able to do things like, you know, forward to our iPhones, or there's all kinds of fancy unified messaging features that, you know, some of these solutions offer. So ends topic 6. All right, topic 7, firewall shopping. Now, this may not be of interest at all to any of you who are not sort of involved in the IT side, but it is pretty eye-opening and interesting to, you know, learn a lot more and then actually be comparison shopping firewalls. One of our firewall license expired in November, and we've actually gotten our existing one extended because we haven't made a final decision on which way we're going to go. But we have what's called a SonicWall firewall, and SonicWall got bought by Dell, I don't know, a number of years ago, or maybe it wasn't that long ago. But then our whole, you know, set of access points and our switch network, our whole network is Cisco Meraki. And so we've been looking at, you know, getting a Meraki security appliance, which means firewall, because it would integrate right within the dashboard where we're able to take a look at all of our access points, our mobile manager, actually, for our iPads that we have in our libraries, and we have a few student iPads out there and teacher iPads. Anyway, all of that is inside this dashboard for Meraki, but, you know, currently we have a separate dashboard for SonicWall. Oh my gosh. One of the things that's just kind of frustrating is how complex it is. And Meraki offers opportunities to simplify some of that. One of their famous things is like four or five click VPN setup. And one of the things that we need to be doing is setting up, some VPN tunnels on our SonicWall. One of them is to, you know, for our librarian to get into an alarm that we have on a fish tank that we've got in one of our division buildings. But also just for us to be able to get back to school, a VPN is a tunnel that goes through the internet and it directly connects you usually to your place of work, or it connects you to another place. And folks, are basically unable to hack your information that is being sent through a VPN tunnel. It actually can be a great thing if you're somebody who works at coffee shops to pay for a VPN service, because if you're accessing things just from a coffee shop access point, there are tools and hacker devices that people can use and software they can use to basically sniff your traffic and, you know, find passwords and things like that. You're sending in the clear and, you know, intercept stuff and do bad things. So VPNs are very important in banking. They're very important in business. And so anyway, I'm a little frustrated with how complex the Sonic Wall is. And basically you can get a, you know, whole certification in Sonic Wall, you know, firewall management, and it would really be nice to be able to do what we need and not have to have that level of complexity. But anyway, the pricing of the Meraki is quite a bit more than what we would have if we continue our current SonicWall license or would even look at upgrading. The biggest thing that we discovered in the last week, 2 weeks, I guess, is that unfortunately Meraki's firewalls only allow for 2 uplinks. And if we're understanding our Sonic Wall properly, we have potentially 5 uplinks where we can bring internet traffic into our network. Currently, we have a dedicated 100 megabit internet connection that we get from Cox as a fiber connection. And then we have a cable modem, which looks just like a residential cable modem, but it's a business cable modem. And before I got to school and started in July, that had been just bringing in 12 megabits downstream internet bandwidth for our guest network, which is segmented and separate. We bumped that up this summer to 50 megabit. It can go all the way up to 100 megabit. And this is something, I don't know what the acronym stands for, but there's something I've been reading about called WINS, which basically means that in, you know, school and business enterprise networks, it is much more affordable to bring in additional internet bandwidth on these kinds of cable modems, that rather than just increasing your dedicated pipe that you're paying for. And so what I anticipate probably doing, because we signed up for a 7-year contract with our Meraki access points and switches and everything. And so as we were looking at quoting this stuff, we were looking at, you know, signing getting 6 years of additional support so that the license on our firewall matched the license on our switches and our access points and all that. So, you know, it's hard to forecast for the next 6 years, you know, for your school network, but we know that, I'm positive, that internet bandwidth needs, demands are going to just continue to increase and increase. So I don't think it would make sense for us to make this, you know, $15,000 investment, something in that ballpark, you know, in a new Meraki firewall and 6-year license if we cannot, you know, get another cable modem at some point, or, you know, another kind of internet bandwidth. Some schools and districts will have redundancy. They'll, you know, bring in a connection here in Oklahoma from our state provider, from OneNet, and they can bring in something from AT&T and something from Cox. If you're in an urban area, you are fortunate to have choices like that. And I know there's some fiber providers in the Tulsa area that we don't have here, and there's rumors, pardon me, that Google is going to bring Google Fiber to the Oklahoma City area, which would be great. But anyway, that is, man, that's some digging in the weeds as far as figuring out this kind of stuff. So again, I'll share this as a shout out that if you have any recommendation, advice, if you've got a great tutorial for here's how to quickly set up your VPN on your Sonic Wall firewall, we're working with some different vendor representatives and some people that have helped us out as far as getting our analyzers up, because this is something else that as a tech director I want to have and be able to provide for our administration is some robust reporting in terms of, you know, what's happened and even get down to the user level. We're not yet synchronizing our Google Apps for Education accounts with our Active Directory accounts. But eventually, you know, to be able to know where people have gone and what they've done and, you know, have some good, powerful Big Brother capabilities as far as what's happening on our school network. And so we're working in that direction, and there's still a steep learning curve that we're going through. So if you have any suggestions of resources or things to help with that, that'd be great. I'd be interested in that. So ends topic 7. All right. Topic number 8. Being the dad of an avid 6th grade YouTuber. Well, here we are at 53 minutes, so I better hurry up if I'm going to finish this in an hour. Well, if you don't know, our youngest daughter, Rachel, is an amazing person, and all our kids are amazing, but she has really gotten into Minecraft in the last year, and this summer, she is in 6th grade, and this summer, I had taught her how to screencast. She wanted to know how to record so that she could make some Minecraft videos, because she's watched, you know, Stampy and Squishy and a bunch of other YouTubers. Pardon me. And then I also signed her up for a connected camp, which was a server online, and she was able to play and build with, you know, kids all over the country. A lot of them, I think, were from California, but just really had a great time. And now she has over 200 subscribers on her YouTube channel. I think she told me this week she's like 20 away from having 300. And so if you want to follow her, you're certainly welcome to do so. Maybe the easiest way is just to go to her website that I've helped her set up, which is rachelfryer.com. Her YouTube channel is Rachel Artist. And I'm pretty sure we set it up before YouTube changed their policies. Now you have to have 500 subscribers on a YouTube channel before you can create a custom channel name. So you can go, I'm pretty sure, to, like, you can, mine I got set up a long time ago, so you can go to youtube.com/wfryer, W-F-R-Y-E-R, and directly get to my YouTube channel. Rachel's, again, is Rachel Artist, so I think you can go to youtube.com/Rachel Artist. And then her Twitter handle, and she's been using Twitter mainly to connect with YouTubers and then, you know, post about her Minecraft episodes, which she's over 20 episodes now, is RachFMC for Minecraft. So it's RachFMC, as her Twitter handle. So anyway, if you know anyone who is into Minecraft, you've got students at school, you can, you know, share Rachel's channel. She's been using an old MacBook Pro, and we just gave my son a new MacBook Pro as a 18th birthday present that he got last weekend, and so we're about to have a domino effect of laptops in our house, with the older child's laptop going to the younger child, going to the next younger child. So anyway, Rachel may be getting more productive as her laptop grows in its speed and capability. But she just did a video in the last week or so about how she creates videos, how she screencasts, and we're going to have to figure out what we're doing this summer, but I'm guessing that I'm probably going to lead at least one Minecraft camp at our school for area students, and I will probably enlist the help of Rachel. And a couple summers ago, she and I went up to Bozeman, Montana, and I was sharing the closing keynote at the Discovery Education Network DEN Summer Institute. And the highlight for me, and probably the highlight for many of the attendees, was Rachel presenting about Scratch and teaching about a little game that she had made in Scratch. And so it is so exciting to see her really coming into her own. But it's also challenging because, you know, I mean, she wanted a Skype account the other day because she wanted to Skype and talk while she played Minecraft with, you know, someone she met online, which is like, you know, who is that? Who is this person? Is this a real, you know, kid? I mean, how do we know it's not a dude? And it's turned out, I mean, the person who she connected with is in Canada, and she has a YouTube channel, and so Rachel, you know, showed me some of her videos, and we listened, and then I was present when they connected. I let her use my Skype account, but it's kind of crazy to, you know, she loves being able to produce these videos and to, you know, connect. There have been a few negative comments. That's been one of the concerns that we've had, because YouTube can be a pretty ugly and brutal place as far as commenting and all that. But generally, people are so supportive, and they just love what she's doing, and she gets great feedback. It's just been very, very positive. But it's kind of wild. Again, it's sort of like that video conferencing situation with India I was telling you about. There are things that are become normal that happen a lot, but then, you know, things kind of jar you and you're like, what? You know, and she said, can I have a Skype dad? I want to play Minecraft with my friend in Canada. She actually learned how to set up almost all by herself a Minecraft server locally. I had to help her configure our router to do something called port forwarding so that people outside, you know, our house could connect. And then, but she was in the terminal of Mac OS 10, which is like, you know, command line stuff, changing permissions and, you know, following instructions from somebody who had described this on YouTube. So anyway, we got it to work, and then we actually helped my cousins up in Liberty, Missouri get that set up over Thanksgiving last weekend. So there ends topic 8. Okay, topic 9, and I'm going to go quick because I'm pretty sure I'm probably over an hour now. My phone just goes to sleep here, and yes, I'm at 59:19. So I will be using my mailing list this next year, and so if you are not subscribed to my mailing list, I have not been a big fan of email lists, but one of the things I've consistently heard over and over again from the authors and folks who are trying to advise writers and authors about, you know, marketing and getting the word out about your book is building your mailing list. So I've been building a mailing list now for over a year. I haven't ever sent out a message to it. Okay, well, there you go. I exceeded the hour-long limit of the Ferrite iOS app, the free version. So because I paused, I was able to find this. Chris Maselli, whose Twitter handle is CPNM, recommends using the email marketing tool ActiveCampaign. So it's activecampaign.com. And basically what Chris describes is you can kind of like if this, then that, where you set up triggers for if somebody subscribes here or if somebody does such and such, then you can have different kinds of messages that go to them, and you can, one of the things that, and I guess I'm going to do this. You know, research definitely shows that people don't buy things usually off of social media. But if you build a tribe of followers, and if you're still listening to this podcast, you're probably in my tribe, or maybe you're joining my tribe. People will tend to buy things when they, you know, have a relationship with someone and off of an email more than, you know, off of a tweet or a Twitter link or something you share on Facebook. So anyway, I'm going to be switching over. This is one of my Christmas holiday goals, over to ActiveCampaign, and I'm going to start using it as a mailing list. So anyway, for more updates from me in 2016, there's an option. I'm really, really looking forward, by the way, to the announcement of ISTE proposals. I submitted, I think, 6 proposals for ISTE, and I am hopeful that at least one of them will be accepted. So we will see. There ends topic 9. All right, last topic number 10, question and answer. And so this is actually going to be something maybe I should have done this far sooner. But this is from Kathy Smith, whose Twitter handle is Kim4Me2, with the number 4 and the number 2. And she asked, how do you ensure documents are searchable on a Google site? So the first thing I would say to this is that when you upload a document to Google, if you've got like a Word document, you need to be aware that there's 2 ways those documents can be handled by Google Drive. The first way, if you don't do anything different, is it's going to kind of treat it like Dropbox, and it's going to just upload it as a Word file. It's not going to convert it into the Google Docs format. That's the editable format. And so I have my settings for my Google Drive set to always auto convert, or I think maybe there's a choice to say ask, so it'll prompt you. And I haven't done this in a while. Usually I want it in Google Docs format. So if you don't do that and it does upload as a Word file, you can still go into Google Drive, click on it, and then choose to open it in Google Docs as a Google Doc. I am not 100% sure, but I'm going to guess that unless your documents are Google Doc formatted, they're not as Word, they may not be full text searchable. So that's going to be my first recommendation, is make sure that your documents are converted into Google Docs format and don't remain in a native, you know, Microsoft Word or Excel or PowerPoint format. So that would be tip number one. And then tip number two is basically just to give really good titles to your documents. I'm guessing, Kathy, that you want this to be full text searchable. So that, you know, the first thing that I said there is going to be my best recommendation. But, other than that, I would just say, you know, put in a great title so that hopefully when you're searching for things, you're going to be including things that are in that title. My third tip is going to actually be to refer you to Alice Keeler. Alice is phenomenal, and she's so smart about all things Google. And if she doesn't know the answer, I'm sure she can find it. And so she'd be a great person to ask as well. So, yes, I have unfortunately had that to the very end. So, Kathy, if you did not want to endure that entire podcast of an hour plus, hopefully you were able to skip to the end using a chapter bookmark. So that is the end of the podcast for December 4th, 2015, The Technology Director Speaks. And if you have survived to the end of this podcast, I would love to hear from you. Actually, I'd love to hear from anybody who listens to the podcast. And I did include that request for a shout out on Twitter in one of the earlier podcasts, and it was great to hear from folks. I mean, I had someone from Australia who was listening, and anyway, it's just kind of cool. It's one of the neat things about social media and the world in which we live, the flat world, or almost, well, it's not flat. The world is not flat, but it's getting flatter. And these kinds of connections really are phenomenal because it's great that we can learn together. So thank you so much for tuning in. Last little plug, just mentioned some different websites. You've probably found this podcast on my main blog, which is speedofcreativity.org. Remember that my primary media literacy and digital literacy website is called now Show With Media. Show What You Know With Media, and it's on showwithmedia.com. You can also find more podcasts if you'd like to fuel yourself up with more ideas on Fuel for Educational Change Agents, which is on audio.speedofcreativity.org. And without a doubt, the best way to learn with me, if you're interested, is to just follow me on Twitter, because I'm frequently sharing things there. And my Twitter handle, my main one, is W. Fryer. So you can follow my Christian blog if you're interested at eyesright.speedofcreativity.org, or that Twitter handle is eyesrightblog. And I usually put a few things up there every week. And as I already mentioned with iPad Media Camp, you can check that out at ipadmediacamp.com. And the Twitter handle is iPad Media Camp. So until next time, this has been Wes Fryer in Oklahoma City. Hope you have a wonderful night or day or afternoon or whatever it happens to be when you're listening to this podcast. And I hope that you will also find ways to pay it forward with sharing of ideas. There's so many different wonderful ways that we can be inspired. And as we share ideas and share our learning with others, whether that's face to face or digitally, then we just, you know, we pay it forward. So pay it forward in the days and weeks to come. Take care.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org. Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.